WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
Good night and good luck. With those words, Edward R. Murrow closed his famous See It Now broadcast denouncing the anti-communist witch hunts spearheaded by Senator Joe McCarthy. It's also the title of the new movie about Murrow, his network CBS, and what led up to that broadcast. George Clooney directed, co-wrote, and plays Murrow's producer, Fred Friendly. Film critic David Edelstein has a review.
At the midpoint of George Clooney's Good Night and Good Luck, CBS chairman William Paley attempts to dissuade Edward R. Murrow and his producer, Fred Friendly, from going on the air with an attack on Senator Joseph McCarthy. In a big oaken office reeking of power, Paley, played by Frank Langella, argues that McCarthy's going to self-destruct anyway. Later, he says that viewers expect objective reporting, not civics lessons. But Paley's case is undermined by the very movie we're watching. Because what Clooney has made is a civics lesson, and a rousing and unapologetically one-sided one, with a melodramatic charge. The villain is not so much McCarthy, dead these 40 years, as a culture in which dissent is punished with innuendo and worse. Good Night and Good Luck is set in 1954, when the tide is turning against the junior senator from Wisconsin and his overweening anti-communist crusade. But TV has yet to go along, and Murrow, played with affecting gravity by David Strathairn, and Friendly, played by Clooney, have had enough of this atmosphere of fear and intimidation. To keep their jobs, CBS employees have had to sign an oath of loyalty to the United States, and local affiliate anchor Don Hallenbach, played by Ray Wise, is being driven mad by a tabloid columnist's relentless charges that he's a pinko. The script, by Clooney and Grant Heslov, doesn't make the point, and maybe should have, that the TV medium often lags behind print in afflicting the powerful, constricted as it is by the interests of its sponsors and the celebrity status of its anchor people. Nor does it tell you that Murrow came relatively late to the anti-McCarthy party. But there's no doubt that his primetime network TV debunking of McCarthy reached a vast public and had a momentous effect. The bulk of the film is set in the CBS studios, and the cinematographer, Robert Elswit, uses high-contrast black and white to evoke both the era and the starkness of the forces in play. The movie feels electrified. It never settles into a loitering pictorial. It has the chain-smoking jitteriness of its protagonist. Cigarettes, by the way, are everywhere, and the way the white smoke curls against the deep blacks is both beautiful and ominous. You don't need to be told that Murrow died of lung cancer. Good Night and Good Luck is a hagiography, a portrait of a journalistic saint who stands up to Paley and a network executive played as a pudgy, complacent weasel by Jeff Daniels. There is no suggestion in the film that some rational people at the time believed that Soviet communism was a threat and that there might have been spies in the State Department. The focus is on the many unjustly hauled before McCarthy's committee, their lives destroyed by hearsay. Clooney has said he made this picture because of unnerving contemporary parallels, like the TV host who declared critics of the invasion of Iraq enemies of the state, or the best-selling author who branded the majority of Democrats guilty of treason. I could tell you more about Good Night and Good Luck, about the moody interludes between acts, smoky jazz numbers sung by Diana Reeves, or the awkward subplot featuring Robert Downey Jr. and Patricia Clarkson as married CBS employees who act as a kind of Greek chorus. But I'll shut up and let Strathairn's Murrow have the last word, from the end of his legendary anti-McCarthy broadcast.
Earlier, the senator asked, "Upon what meat does this our Caesar feed?" Had he looked three lines earlier in Shakespeare's Caesar, he would have found this line, which is not altogether inappropriate. "The fault, dear Brutus, is not in our stars, but in ourselves." No one familiar with the history of this country can deny that congressional committees are useful. It is necessary to investigate before legislating, but the line between investigating and persecuting is a very fine one, and the junior senator from Wisconsin has stepped over it repeatedly. We must not confuse dissent with disloyalty. We must remember always that accusation is not proof, and that conviction depends upon evidence and due process of law. We will not walk in fear one of another. We will not be driven by fear into an age of unreason if we dig deep in our history and our doctrine, and remember that we are not descended from fearful men, not from men who feared to write, to associate, to speak, and to defend the causes that were for the moment unpopular. This is no time for men who oppose Senator McCarthy's methods to keep silent, or for those who approve. We can deny our heritage and our history, but we cannot escape responsibility for the results. We proclaim ourselves, indeed, as we are, the defenders of freedom wherever it continues to exist in the world. But we cannot defend freedom abroad by deserting it at home. The actions of the junior senator from Wisconsin have caused alarm and dismay amongst our allies abroad and given considerable comfort to our enemies. And whose fault is that? Not really his. He didn't create this situation of fear. He merely exploited it, and rather successfully. Cassius was right. The fault, dear Brutus, is not in our stars, but in ourselves. Good night, and good luck.
David Edelstein is film critic for Slate.